What's up, Fanatics? It's time for another Cyclone Fanatic podcast. It's the seniors. I'm Jared Stansberry, joined by my good friend Rob Gray. Rob, how you doing?
Fantastic. Numero uno of the seniors. Episode 3, is it not?
Correct.
Sorry, I just had to throw in a couple words of Spanish as you're studying it this semester.
Did you say numero uno, though?
What?
Today's the third one, isn't it? Numero tres?
Holy crap. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, seis, siete, ocho, nueve, diez. Yeah, yeah.
30 seconds in, and we already have realized that Rob has forgotten how to count.
we're going to say there are some mitigating circumstances involved here on this Labor Day weekend. Yeah. That was a bad play. But good play by the Cyclones, generally right. speaking, particularly the defense on Saturday night against the Panthers. That Aaron Bailey dude can run, but he really had a hard time throwing it. What do you think, as I strangely, just for one time, you know, throw the question your way? I mean, obviously they went to Cole Morgan, who'd won at Iowa State before, and fifth-year senior, and then they got Eli Dunn's feet wet in that game since it was, you know, getting out of hand. I think that the Bailey kid was actually potentially a pretty good quarterback. I think both right. teams' receivers struggled to get open against superior secondaries. What did you see out there?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, Bailey was so dangerous because they just kept losing contain time after time after time. They'd get him, they would get pressure on him, and then you'd see the guy coming on a blitz or something like that, and he'd run right by him. And then the middle of the field would be wide open, and he'd be able to run for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 yards. And that was where the difference was between Bailey and Cole Morgan. Cole Morgan wasn't going to take off and run like that, so at that point you could start to just bring the three guys like they kind of did more later in the game, where if those three guys could keep him bottled up and keep him in the pocket and then try and force him into making some throws, they were going to be able to do that, but you weren't able to do that with Bailey, and the defense looked good. I'll say that. The defense looked really, really good.
Yeah, dude, the best thing about it is, you know, those guys – worked at it, particularly the guys that came in the spring and, right. and, you know, Demond Tucker and Jay Jones. Those guys looked like they knew exactly what they were doing all the time. And how many times could we say that about guys on the defense the last two seasons in any game? Mm-hmm. Not that some guys didn't know where they were going all the time. They did. But some guys, through either inexperience or just a lack of aptitude, just game after game didn't know where they were going. The only time they seemed discombobulated was when Bailey got on the loose, and that's going to happen right. when a quarterback's freelancing on a scramble, and you're just trying to figure out what angle to go after him at, or you might, is he going to throw it over here? So I got to kind of hedge there. Defense impressed me more than I thought it would, to be honest. And Dale Pearson, of course, front and center with the three sacks and the big pick. Biggest play in an Iowa State game I've seen in a long, long time, because that completely turned the tide. The offense finally started to convert some things out of the field position they kept getting via the punt returns, and pulled away for a 24-point win against a UNI team that still has a considerable amount of talent, but obviously is finding its way at quarterback and some right. other spots.
Right, and I think they've kind of been that way the last couple of years, haven't they? Where Cole Morgan played a lot, but at the same time they were kind of a revolving door. QB for them.
Yeah. He had some injuries, and also, they doing it, switching to that new system, more spread, no huddle. Even early on, it didn't seem like they were that comfortable running it. Mm-mm. So even though they drilled it all, it seemed like that's a work in progress for them. You know, the Cyclones had something to do with that. You know, I don't think they expected, even though we'd all written about it and talked about it a little bit, that the Cyclones freely admitted that they might, wink, nod, use more 3-4 sets than the traditional 4-3 base that they've done a lot. We read that as they will use more 3-4. They still use more 3-4 than I thought they would. And Rhodes said after the game that that's going to sort of depend on the opponents. They have both packages well drilled. Iowa would seem like a classic 4-3 team. But, you know, Beathard being the wild card might just try to go downfield a lot. But that's what's going to be interesting to see if it can be very productive, at the 4-3 too, because I think we found some real. I mean, Tucker got penetration
right.
with a couple guys on him.
Right. I was going to say he was consistently battling double teams, and he was consistently beating
yeah.
double teams. The thing that struck me so much about Tucker is that he wasn't there on every single play making the tackle. He wasn't always right there at the ball, but his presence was almost always felt by the fact that he was just always putting pressure on the ball carrier, whether it was him pushing his man back and having to readjust where he's going to where a linebacker can run up and make the tackle, or him getting in and forcing essentially the Dale Pearson, the pass that led the Dale Pearson
yeah. yep.
interception. And if he is able to be disruptive like that, it changes the whole way that defense can play, because the linebackers are able to run so much more freely. And if you've got one guy taking up three blockers, that leaves the middle wide open for Jordan Harris and Jay Jones and Willie Harvey and Levi Peters to just take free rein at all that open space after those blockers are trying to just nail down one guy.
Absolutely. I think of it as you've got the calm, like glass, sheet of glass kind of pond. Nothing has caused anything. Tucker is the first big rock you throw in there that starts the ripples, and then you put in pebbles around it, and mm-hmm. the whole effect is chaos produced by first that larger rock, and he has that kind of effect, and then guys can make smaller. You know what I mean? His impact is really big, even though it's not always noticed. And then the guys come in and make those plays, like you said. I think it's going to be interesting to see. As you play, now you and I was breaking in some new offensive linemen, and again, it's an FCS school, also an FCS school that traditionally protects the quarterback darn well, no matter who they play against, including Wisconsin games, Iowa games in the recent years, and can run block. They struggled to do both those things, obviously, against Iowa State on Saturday night. You know, new guys are not, they always have some talent there, but can Tucker take that and sustain it? As you go, talk about a guy that you can't afford to get hurt.
Right.
I mean, look, there are lots of them. But a guy like that who, based on what he does, even if he doesn't show up in the play like he did in getting the initial pressure that caused Bailey to toss it right at Pearson, he as you said, is taking up enough blockers. He's disrupting it so much that you've only got a few guys there to try to pick up three or four right. guys, and it just is impossible for an offensive line to do that.
Right, and even if they go into that 4-3, if they've got to commit two guys to Tucker every single time, that's going to leave it open for no matter who it is, if it's
Pearson, Taylor.
Yeah, Pearson,
Aka,
Taylor,
Blitzer.
Pierre Aka, if it's Bobby Leith, it doesn't matter
Robbie
who
Garcia,
it is.
Yeah.
That you're almost always going to be guaranteed that you're going one-on-one with who you're playing. And the comparison that I would make is, I'm not saying that Tucker's on this level right now, but when Ndamukong Suh was playing the way he did his senior year at Nebraska, they had to commit so much attention mm-hmm. to him that it allowed guys like Levante David, who came in and he broke like the single season record for tackles that mm-hmm. year in Nebraska. Jared Crick had an absolutely huge year and has made a career in the NFL out of it. And that is the kind of thing that you see a dominant defensive tackle do. And for Tucker, the next step really would be to be like Sue was, where he wasn't just disrupting, he was making the plays
getting
as well.
Sacks.
And
he did get a sack.
Yeah.
And I think another half tackle, a loss maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. I think one of the things that happened as he made his presence felt more, we saw Kamari Cotton-Moya led the team in tackles last year, Big 12 Freshman Defensive Player of the Year. Excellent player.
Mm-hmm.
Five tackles off the bat. I think he ended up with eight.
Yeah.
And you saw Jordan Harris and Jay Jones rise to the top with nine. As that line got its feet under it, you know, but no matter what Bailey was doing, Harris and Jay Jones became your playmakers in terms of tackles and also, you know, really getting back there and disrupting things. So that's what you want to see. When Iowa State's defenses are good, when Iowa State's defenses put Iowa State, I'm thinking 11 and 12 in particular, put Iowa State in a position to have winning seasons. I know those were both 6-7 seasons, but they were in a position to do that, albeit some injuries in 2012 hampered it. It's because linebackers mm-hmm. are leading the team in tackles. And the reason they are is because you had a Jake McDonough in there. You had some guys, Cleon Lang, you had some guys on some of those lines that could do more than occupy one guy.
Right.
And you're small sample size, but we certainly saw that on Saturday night.
Right. And really, the I feel like, in my opinion, the job of a defensive lineman a lot of the times is to just take up blockers and let those linebackers really be able to roam free without a bunch of guys coming at them at that one time. You know what I mean? And even if unless you've got guys like Jadeveon Clowney and people like that that are going to sack the quarterback 15 times in a season, not saying that Dale Pearson can't do that, but he probably isn't that kind of player. You know, Dale just needs to be able to hold his ground. They need to be able to hold their ground, hold blocks, and let people just run with reckless abandon. And that's what they did last night. You saw them getting four, five, six guys to the ball every single play. All of those linebackers seem to be around the ball all the time.
Yeah. The thing that I saw from the defense that was most impressive is it completely coincided and backed up with things Rhodes and Molly Burnham had said they'd been seeing. Better gang tackling, seeing more guys swarm to the ball. It wasn't just, oh my gosh, there's one guy there to make a play. Well, what if he doesn't? It was a number of guys. There was no way that play wasn't going to get cleaned up when that running back got there or that receiver got there. You know, and the other things, the guys that showed up, that I mean, the guys that were showing up in spring, you know, in spring and in camp, you know, the Tuckers, the Joneses, Reagan Northrup came in out of sack. So you had that, you know, all that big talk about how good those guys both were at nickel showed up in the game. I mean, and conversely, a lot of the things we were looking for on offense really didn't show up. Right. I mean, they did when push came to shove, and I think that's important. Particularly the play for an offense that sticks out for me is that 3rd and 19 that they complete to Dondre Daley. Right. They only got a field goal out of that drive, but I believe that was the go-ahead field goal. Well, yeah, it would have had to have been because it made it 10-7. You fail there, you know, Netton's 0 for 2. Is he going for a 45-yard? I'm trying to remember exactly where they were at. It might have been even deeper. You know, Sam made a good throw. Daley made an excellent catch. He was very good. I mean, so what we heard about his camp definitely showed up, but I mean, the consistency that you needed to see in extending drives, finishing drives, still left something wanting. Something that Sam Richardson freely admitted. You know, that's why he's a captain. And when he came in and spoke to the reporters that remained late last night, you know, he said, "Hey, we can't have that kind of field position and not, you know, and lead that many points and plays on the field. So look for that to improve." But defense was every bit as good. There was no hype throughout fall camp about the defense based on what we saw on Saturday.
Right. And the thing about them leaving points out on the field, you also have to take into account that they did get into field goal position twice and Cole Netton just missed the field goal. So they had themselves in a opportunity to put those points on the board, just weren't able to put it in that one time. And I don't think you can expect Cole Netton to miss two field goals in one game.
It's not very often. I mean, one of them, you know, what are they, 38-41?
Something like that. Yeah.
He had one game late in the season where he won a three, but I know at least one or maybe both those kicks were deep. I mean, talking like 50. And he was so accurate last year. It's just one of those things where, you know, a kicker is kind of like a goalie in soccer or hockey, you know, a different breed, you know, who knows what was going on. But I wouldn't be surprised if he rattled off 9 or 10 straight,
right,
you know, as long as he's not, you know, trying to pop through a 57-yarder. So that's a good thing. But clearly you want to convert more touchdowns there. And one of the things that struck me, and I know you and I has certainly a potential pro in DeAndre Hall, the Kilfoy kid at safety. He's a hard hitter, although I didn't notice his presence as much as I thought I would. And they got, who was it? The Singleton kid that went to Nebraska. He was in there for him, a transfer from Nebraska.
Oh yeah.
I mean, so they had some talent in their secondary. I mean, a very, very, very good secondary, even a good FBS secondary, but you needed, I mean, I wanted to see some of the burners really get behind the defense. And I know Bundridge broke open a couple times that Sam was sacked, but I want to see a little bit more of that. You know, I don't care that this guy's a really good corner. I'm going to get past him.
Right.
And, you know, we're going to burn him for this. How much of that was also kind of calling a little bit of a conservative game, too? Mm-hmm. I mean, do they feel the offense has progressed to the point, talent-wise and understanding of the offense, that they can go back to the mode that many teams use when they face an FCS team of any caliber, you know, relative to the FCS level, whether number one or 60 at that level, you're not going to show a whole lot.
Right.
Because you've got the big in-state rivalry game FBS with Iowa coming up, and then you've got a talented Toledo team in Big 12 competition. So a lot of variables there, and I think Tyler Brown, you know, certainly stood out with that 34-yard run. So a lot of positives, and Sam really came on, mm-hmm. too, and got on a roll there in the second half, third quarter in particular. So hard to complain. I'd like to see a little bit more of that killer instinct, right. when you're starting so many times in the, you know, inside the opponent's territory.
Right, and the only thing that is, it's hard to go deep if you're not going to be able to get blocked for, and you're not going to know, yeah. for sure that you're going to have the time. And they did have the time at certain points, yeah. in the game,
yep.
and he just wasn't able to make the throw. I mean, he had his moments where he stood in the pocket way too long, but at the same time, there are times where he dropped back to pass and there was somebody there almost,
yeah,
immediately.
Yep. That was especially true early, which was kind of a strange dichotomy, because it was early that they opened up their two biggest holes. Tyler Brown's a couple of the big runs, obviously the huge 34-yarder and another one where I looked at those holes and I said, I have not seen an Iowa State offensive line open a hole that big, mm-hmm. for a long time. Those didn't get quite as wide as the game went on, but I was actually more impressed with their run blocking than pass blocking, and that's encouraging because, yeah. Pass blocking is, you know, I think can be cleaned up. I mean, if you can't run block, mm-hmm. yeah. there's not a whole lot you can drill on to make it much better.
Well, and the thing that was encouraging to me was that with the run blocking, you could see the holes forming. I mean, mm-hmm. before, you didn't know what was supposed to even be,
yeah.
happening. It was just guys were out there and there was no hole for anywhere to go, but at least there were holes forming where you could see where these running backs were going to have lanes to be able to run, but they're still young. And it's like,
yeah.
It hasn't quite clicked 100% yet. How, like, the timing of them being able to get through those holes against a full live defense.
Yeah. I was actually impressed with how well it did click, though. So much that, with Brown in particular, it seemed like he was really intent, mm-hmm. on following the blockers, you know, and it, with a certain degree of patience, not, you know. And Warren also impressed me a lot in a lot of those plays. And the reason I say it impressed me more than I thought it would is there was one play by Warren that really stood out as one where he just kind of danced sideways too much. Mm-hmm. And against any defense with good athletes, that's going to end up in a no gain or 1 yard loss, and it did. But to only notice that once and to see him apparently just like, hey, this is where the hole's supposed to be. A couple times even the hole wasn't there and they bounced it up, but they bounced it out really efficiently. It wasn't, I'm totally off script now. They just went, okay, what's the next step? Maybe right. It's more open there. And they got, you know, 3, 4, 5 yards out of it. So again, a lot of encouraging things. And at this point, you know, like what I said about the offense, it's just nitpicking because, mm-hmm. I mean, I think the team performed very, very well on Saturday night.
And I think the one other thing we haven't even touched on yet is the punt return game.
Yeah, I mentioned it, but okay. That was just off the charts. I mean, all the things about Lazard, 6'5", you know, it's always these 5'10", you know, burners that are doing punt returns. I mean, without Jarvis West, I mean, I guess he was a 5'7" burner.
Right.
Whatever he was listed at. But
small.
The instincts that Lazard displayed, and clearly, I mean, he and Sam Richardson both made a clear point to say, oh, that punter really helped us out.
Right.
By line driving it every single time. So they weren't going to just say, oh, yeah, it was this. And incidentally, it's one thing I really like about most of those guys on offense. They're not big guys to go like, oh yeah, that was something. They're gonna qualify it if it needs qualification, and that certainly did there. But he still, man, he had that I don't know if you want to call it a sixth sense or just the football IQ, if you will. That hey, you can see where your blockers are setting, mm-hmm. up, and you can it's not. Oh, I'm just going to go there because I'm sort of aim. I mean, he'd, yeah. move himself. I mean, reposition himself. Very impressed with him. And then, of course, Trevor Ryan sticking with it. And Lazard kind of joked that he thought as that bounced around for his touchdown, he was like, oh, man, it's not going to. Then he said once he got it, it's like, oh, man, he's going to do it. You know, and he said he was just as thrilled for him as, right. you know, like he said during that time at the Jacobs building where we were both there. You know, it doesn't matter who's doing it, if he's blocking, if he's scoring. So beyond encouraging to see that kind of explosiveness from from the punt return game.
I think that being able to be a good punt returner is almost a trait that mm-hmm. you have. Being able to see those lanes and see it all forming with all of the people running at you, you can see just good punt returners. When they catch the ball, they just look different when they get the ball in their hands, I feel like.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could be completely off base, but I just feel like the guys that are really, really good punt returners, when they catch it and you can see them look downfield, it just looks like every time they've got that look like they're going to go to the house almost.
It's like a photographic memory maybe, mm-hmm. you know, where it's kind of like they take that snapshot immediately where everything is and then they can anticipate what's going to happen from that and they plot it based on that. I will say this also. I mean, Josh Jolles, he had the fumble recovery, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that guy's been a special team star for quite a while, and I know that they were blocking pretty well for those guys. So that's, I mean, any edge you can get. They didn't end up plus. Did they end up plus in turnovers? I think it ended up being a wash. They got the pick, and they got the fumble recovery by Jolles.
And then
they had the Bundridge fumble.
Yeah, they fumbled
the weird
twice.
One where stretching for the touchdown. Who can blame him? He's almost right. there. Just right. lost control of the ball, apparently. I don't think he – because, you know.
Yeah.
And then what was it? The pick. I think it was 2-2. But clearly the Cyclones ones were you know, not you know, game changers, but mm-hmm. Pearson certainly was to a degree. And then your special teams play – vastly better than the opponent. So if you can at least be a wash on turnovers, and if the biggest one of the game is one that sets your snowball rolling, momentum rolling along, you've had a good day because you've taken over two aspects of the game that are crucial to winning, and obviously aspects of the game that the Cyclones have not excelled in. Punt return pretty good sometimes under Jarvis, and he certainly had you know some touchdowns and big runs, but to keep that going and then. You know, the level of turnover, I guess, they were able to force was also encouraging.
It just makes it exponentially easier on your whole team when you can dominate the field position battle
mm-hmm.
like that. I mean, if they're able to do that consistently all season long, that changes everything almost.
Yeah, and Downing aided that too. I thought he had a nice night.
Mm-hmm.
Even his shorter kicks, they weren't returned. You know, they were fair
right.
caught. And they were usually, I don't know, maximum, it seemed like 25, 26-yard line. Obviously a function sometimes of where he's punting from. But I'm pretty sure his net was 40-plus.
Right.
And you got to feel good about that. So all in all, an effort that, you know, after losing two season openers, the response to adversity they showed by Pearson's play, spurred by Tucker's pressure, and I'm sure other guys doing things on that defense too. And then, you know, the third and 19, so many things, there are adverse situations that they said, hey, we're going to convert this. We're going to turn something that doesn't look good into something that will spur us ahead. That's all the type of stuff that you were looking for. And, you know, they delivered on most of it, at least Saturday.
What'd you think about the South End Zone? First night.
We've toured it. I mean, we didn't see it in a game
right,
situation.
Exactly.
Seeing the ribbon going and, you know, it changes the atmosphere in that stadium. Granted, we're not within it. We are mm-hmm. in the press box looking down on it. So we have an interesting, in some ways, our view of how it looks different is enhanced. But I think in terms of the actual experience of the atmosphere, it would be better to kind of, is the crowd noise more? Is it
right.
as visually, is it something? But from there, I mean, I think they almost underestimated the how it could add to the big time visual appeal, and
right.
I think auditory, you know, sound wise too. I mean, seemed very loud and raucous and yeah, obviously almost 5,000 more fans than the previous highest sellout.
Right.
A lot of positives there. And, you know, fans talked about, you know, it's obviously been a huge thing for fans for decades. And the players talked about feeding off that. And almost an added sense of responsibility as you see, you know, you came off a 2-10 season and you sell out that place. Now, how much of that is just the South End Zone being completed? Some, mm-hmm. maybe even most. But the fact that you not, I mean, says a lot for that fan base and the faith that they have or just the love that they have for that program. you know, whether the faith is there or not. But Saturday night, if anything, should fuel that cautious optimism as Iowa, Toledo, and another Big 12 gauntlet looms.
Exactly. It's time for that team from the East to make its trek.
The Hawks.
Yeah. Are you excited? Do you enjoy Cy-Hawk Week, or are you not a fan?
I enjoy it because I think it fires up a lot of people. And if people have the right spirit about it, even if they're really standoffish, I think they also – they're standoffish in a way that it's not really that if you met that guy you're tweeting at, you'd start punching each other. It's, you know, I'm gonna you know, elbow in your ribs and, okay, right. Oh, what's your elbow back going to be? Oh, okay, all right. Well, there's another one. You know, I definitely appreciate that. And I mean, it's good that both teams, I think, played better. I mean, both fan bases were shaken by last year, you know, with Iowa getting crushed by Tennessee in that, whatever the heck they called it, the Tax Slayer Bowl.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the Cyclones 2-10, no wins in the Big 12, one win at home, to come out against good FCS teams, and basically had their way. I think Iowa had their way more start to finish than Iowa State did. But nonetheless, Iowa State had its way for a good three quarters, mm-hmm. versus the first three and a half like Iowa. Just sets up to be potentially another great game. And most of them have been really great, at least in the sense that they're tense down to the end. You know, you can go back to the 9-6 win what was that, 2012?
Yeah.
In last year's win with E.J. Bibbs and the talk of almost crapping himself. And he's pulling it off the fingertips, you know, saying Sam Richardson saying he almost crapped himself because he threw it to him kind of like a dart.
Yeah.
And that combination and that big win. And, I mean, lots of great moments. The Steel Jans game. I mean, talk about contain. Mm-hmm. My gosh, I mean, Iowa fans probably had the word contain ringing in their head almost for the rest of the season. With Steel at, what was it, double overtime, 44-41, or was it triple?
I want to say it was triple, but I could be wrong.
But either way, I mean, just a lot of great games in recent years, and it's going to be another great atmosphere at Jack Dry Stadium, great tailgating atmosphere, not a night game. You know, a big Fox, you know,
it's the game
national
of the week.
Yeah. Platform. So
Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt.
Yeah, you get Gus Johnson with some very emphatic calls. So yeah, it's hard not to be excited. I mean, if you're a sports fan in the state of Iowa and you have any love for Iowa or Iowa State, or if you like both, I mean, it's a great week, and it's fun to cover. I think it's more fun to be a fan. It's definitely fun to cover.
I've never been to an Iowa-Iowa State game.
Really? This is your first?
This is my first Iowa-Iowa State game.
Were you always like at a Nebraska Nebraska, and who would they be playing that week? Maybe Savannah. No, the Nevada Wolf Pack or something would be rolling into Lincoln for a non-conference tilt.
I actually remember going to Lincoln the day of the Steel Jans game and listening to John Walters and Eric Heft listening to the end of that game. At that point, I was less of a Cyclone and more of I just really don't like Iowa.
Mm,
that's okay. Kind of the point I was at in my life, and I was giddy. I Steel Jans, you know, the man, the myth, the legend that is Steel Jans.
Yes, the mystery.
He was one of the first guys I remember cheering for Iowa State.
That's a good, I guess, baptism into the game, even though you weren't actually within the stadium to see it. That was a memorable game to cover too. Yeah. Maybe we'll have one of those.
How many Cy-Hawk games have you covered?
I think maybe only probably about five. Because I covered you and I for a long time, high schools, auto racing. You know, between Cedar Rapids Gazette and you know, this will be the second one at Fanatic. Probably four, and I think I helped out maybe one at the Register, perhaps. It's kind of a sidebar guy. A lot of great memories. Like I said, it's a fun game to just watch, though.
Right.
So when you're working it, it's a little bit like, well, work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a special atmosphere. And
really
for anybody who has to go, just even if you just want to show up and tailgate, It's a fun game to be around for sure.
And I'm sure everyone will be having tons of fun all throughout the
week. Let's talk about our plans this week. We don't have RVTV because we're not big time.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have big time. But we decided to I'm forcing you into this actually to come up with our own little I don't know if we'd call it a gimmick.
Yeah.
But I thought it would be fun too.
Is Chris really setting up a tent on RVTV?
We'll see.
Is that just a rumor?
We'll see. Chris
truth?
Is prone to hyperbole sometimes talking about his exploits.
Yeah.
So we'll see if he actually goes ahead and resorts to the tent. If he does, it needs to be like one of the old Boy Scout tents. It can't be one of the dome nice ones, mm-hmm. you know, like a Mountain Hardware or Marmot or North Face or a Big Agnes. I mean, it's got to be something that's very rustic, you know, one of those 1999 specials that if it actually rained, you'd get wet. So we'll see how that goes. But we will roll in. We're planning a bike ride. I'm going to saddle up my old Made in America Cannondale mountain bike. It's old because it was made in America. We're going to leave from my place in Ankeny.
Yep.
We're going to get on the Trestle Trail, head towards Slater. We are going to make a stop in Slater.
If anyone wants to come out and check it out,
yes,
we will be in Slater.
We will be in Slater at, I should have done my research, but I know there's a watering hole / kind of like a sports bar grub type of place. That's popular with cyclists. We will stop there. Obviously, as we are responsible cyclists, we will not overindulge. And we will then we'll get on that single bike lane between Slater and Ames, deck of the little hill before you get to the come and go in the Sioux Cup there, and mm-hmm. roll up, say hi to RVTV, and collapse in a heap and go from there. I think it's only going to be about a 27-mile trip, so pretty easy.
Wow.
You're going to have one of those single speed bikes, right?
Yeah.
You don't even know if you've got a ride yet.
I'm going to ride on a tricycle or something.
That would be nice. You could get one of those early 1900s bikes with the big front wheel that's about 20 feet tall. So I always wondered if you fell over in one of those things, what the heck happened? I mean, nobody had helmets for anything back then. I guess, outside of war. Sorry, I got on a tangent there. But, we're going to do that and going to enjoy it. And if anybody is in the neighborhood in Slater, we'll be tweeting out maybe when we're leaving and maybe try to do some checkpoints, take a few photos along the way and see how it goes. As long as you can get your hands on a bike. You're not gonna like, bail on me, are you?
No. No, I'm not going to bail on you.
You wouldn't do that to the old man.
No. We're the seniors.
The true senior.
We're a senior duo.
Yeah, that's true.
This is not a senior. This is the seniors.
Sometimes we got to ride for each other, right?
Right.
Got to play for each other, ride for each other. Oh. Just like you were saving my butt when I'm talking Uno instead of Trace. How could I do that? That's, like I said, Labor Day weekend.
I'm going to have Chris ready with Busch Light in hand when I roll up after this bike ride.
He'll be glad to do it, I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm sure he will. All right. Do you want to do picks? We talked about that, but there's a couple good games.
Let's roll through them rapid fire. Yeah.
All right, cool. All right. Oregon at Michigan State.
That's a tough call. I like Michigan State. Okay. That's all I'm going to say about it. Because I mean, I Eastern Washington's a really, really good FCS team.
Right.
With a really good offense. Oregon beat him by, 19, I want to say?
Something like that,
Michigan State, I think, is able to run on him a little bit. Maybe a little bit of a revenge game, and they go out to Eugene and kind of get thumped. Close game, but Spartans. What do you see?
I think it'll be a lot like the game last year where it was close from most of three quarters, and then I think you see Oregon maybe make a little bit of a run. But I think that Michigan State's going to come back. I think Michigan State wins the game in the end.
Okay.
Number 19, Oklahoma at number 25, Tennessee.
I don't think this is a Big 12 bias. I'm not buying Tennessee completely. I mean, I know they came on and they've had these big recruiting classes lately, and obviously they were a traditional power until the last few years where they really started struggling. Their big bowl win last season notwithstanding, I think Oklahoma's got too much for them running game. I mean, much like I think they could go in there and really control the tempo. Mm-hmm. And they're obviously an Oklahoma team is never going to be overwhelmed by an atmosphere. And I think Tennessee will be in it, but I think Oklahoma could win by, you know, two scores, maybe even, you know, two touchdowns, 17 points. You know, it's early in the season, so you don't know who's going to emerge still as those kind of dark horse stud players on some of these, you know, top 25-ish teams. But I like the Sooners to go in and win somewhat comfortably.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. I'd pick the Sooners as well. And then last but not least, Iowa at Iowa State.
See, when I said to do a few picks, I didn't know we were going to pick this one on Sunday night of Labor Day when, well, again, mitigating circumstances. I like it to go to overtime. I think Iowa wins it by a field goal. I like Iowa State to rebound at Toledo. I like Iowa State to rebound at Toledo.
I'm taking Iowa State by a touchdown.
Okay.
I think that Iowa's going to get up by 10, you know, that kind of range, and then mm-hmm. You see them come back. And the adversity that they talked about being able to bounce back from all fall camp long, I think you really see the improvement show.
Yeah. Well, obviously, and I hope, but no one thinks that I'm rooting for that kind of outcome. It's just one of those games where, you know, again, home field hasn't meant a whole lot recently. I think in a weird way, Iowa feels like they have as much to prove as Iowa State, even though they were a bowl team, granted a minor bowl last year, and Iowa State was what it was. But what's really interesting to me is do we see a much different Iowa State offense? Do we see it opened up more? And was that one of the reasons that, you know, maybe some more guys weren't shaking loose against you and I? So I think there's so many interesting wrinkles and storylines to this one that will all be, you know, kind of unveiled and start to be determined, 3:45 on Saturday.
It's going to be a lot of fun. You got anything else to add?
We won't be too drained after that bike ride the night before, right? Well, refuel with a couple Busch Lights and then get a good night's sleep and then boom.
We'll be ready to go. Absolutely. You got anything else?
I don't. I was a little bit long-winded. I screwed up my Spanish, which is inexcusable. I'm going to be thinking about this for like a week. That's my game week. It's my own fault. I got no one else to blame. But I'll look forward to seeing you for the festivities tomorrow for sure.
Definitely. For Rob Gray, I'm Jared Stansbury. You've been listening to the seniors edition of From Cyclone Fanatic. Happy Cy-Hawk week, everybody.